Let's do this. The Cult of Hockey podcast by the faithful and for the faithful. I'm David Staples of the Edmonton Journal, and I'm here today with Bruce McCurdy. Welcome, Bruce.
Hey, David.
So, Bruce, this summer we've been running a series on Cult of Hockey prospects. We've ranked them. I don't know how many summers we've done this in a row. First, you and Jonathan Willis did it.
First, I did it. I did them all the first year, and then John came on board, and we started sharing them. This is the eighth year of our series.
Cool. Have we ever figured out who is the most adept at ranking the prospects?
I'm not sure that we've tried to even do that. Like, what do? Go back years later and say which one of these guys turned out the best and who had them ranked the highest?
I guess so.
Sounds like a multivariable calculation that's, I'm not sure what it would accomplish.
I think my score went out the window with my high ranking of Ziet Paigan last year.
Well, stuff happens. You see stuff, and then you know a little bit, and you don't know a lot. It's my experience.
Yeah, it's easy. That's actually why we got five people to rank them this year, because our thinking was the more people that rank them, probably that go with the wisdom of the crowd rather than one person's opinion, and hopefully that'll give us a bit better overall ranking than we'll get. So this year we had myself and yourself. We had, of course, Kurt Levins of the Cult of Hockey, and two other rankers who know a lot about hockey prospects: Sean Patrick Ryan, who just watches a ton of Ontario Hockey League games. He's the blogs at the Oil Knight. And he lives in London, Ontario, where he's going to see a lot of Evan Bouchard this year, possibly.
Pretty sure that's why he's the Knight. It's because he's in London, and he's an Oil fan, so he's the Oil Knight.
Fair enough. And Matt Mozowicz of Edmonton Prospect Watch, which is a YouTube channel mainly, is
Edmonton
it not?
Future Watch. He had to change it, but it, because of Edmonton Prospects Baseball Club was causing too many clashes of Google hits. Edmonton Future Watch. He is now on the YouTube channel.
So he voted, and we got some pretty solid ratings. And today, Bruce, we're going to look at the centers. Now, the centers, I think we would both agree, there's probably the least amount of depth at center of any prospect position in the Oilers organization. It's certainly the, of all the positions, we have the highest center is ranked fifth overall. That's Ryan McLeod. And so I think we have, except for goalie, I guess, Stewart's, there's not a goalie ranked above that, but there's a lot of good goalies. There's a lot of goalies. There's not a lot of good centers. I mean, McLeod and Cooper Marody are the two highest. Marody's at number nine. Then we have Cameron Hebig, and Cameron Hebig is rated at, just give me one second, number 17. And Appoli Rassinen, who's at number 21. Right. So there, it's other than McLeod and maybe Marody, there's everyone else is in the long shot category. And the reason for this, of course, Bruce, is the Oilers are kind of stocked at center at the NHL level. So most teams in the NHL are desperate for one player under the age of 25 who can, be that top line center. The Oilers have two of them in McDavid and Leon Draisaitl. McDavid's 21 and I think Draisaitl's 22. Yeah. And he'll be 23 in October. So the Oilers both signed up long term. So the Oilers aren't going to be looking for a number one or number two center, fingers crossed, for the next decade. But they will be needing an endless supply of 3-4 centers as well as wingers who can fill in. And Marody and McLeod could certainly switch over to the wing if they don't make it at center. Let's talk about, we'll start at the bottom, Bruce, with Appoli Rassinen. You've seen Appoli Rassinen play. What's your take on him?
I saw him as playing for Finland in the U18 championships. And, also saw him play then subsequently to Oilers drafting him in the World Junior. Now in the U18, of course, he hadn't been drafted yet. None of those guys are. But he impressed me in that tournament, and he was a name I actually recognized when the Oilers took him in the sixth round. I'm going, geez, a sixth round guy I've actually seen play. Because as I recall, he scored the winning goal against the almost perennial champion United States team, and this was in America. And he scored the winning goal in the 60th minute to eliminate the hosts in the semifinal. But he impressed with more than that. He really has a broad game. He's lots of breadth to his game. I'm not sure the underlying skating is there. To me, he very much reminds me of a young Anton Lander. In fact, I labeled him the poor man's Anton Lander, which is a little bit maybe faint praise. But coming from me, I was a big fan of Anton Lander, and I am a fan of Aapeli Rossinen. I like the player. Like I say, I don't know if he's got the wheels. I do know that he's a right-shooting center. Finnish coach used him in all situations, penalty kill, power play, big face-offs. And he was effective in all three zones. Like, he's a real grinder, reasonable size guy. And he's got game and he's got gumption, you know, and those two things in combination are always attractive to me.
So Lander, he has been compared to Lander, and it's because of him being kind of a two-way center, decent size, not great attacking skills, but seems to be a solid team leader. He played on some really good Finnish junior teams with Puljujärvi, Laine, and Tolvanen. And Lander, of course, was taken in the second round, and this is a sixth round player. So there is a gap, and the gap is that at the same age, 17, 18 years old, Lander was playing with Team Ra. He was playing against men and having some success playing against men. So he was at a different level at the same age as Rassinen. So Rassinen, playing against players his own age, has been a pretty mediocre scoring player, both in junior hockey with he went to, Sioux City? And Sioux City Musketeers at the USHL, he got 25 points in 38 games. And then last year at Boston College as a rookie, he got 16 points in 32 games. He played on an all-rookie line on a very young team, and the line had a lot of success. It's a very good line at that level. But that level of scoring, it's really difficult to make the NHL. Even as a fourth-line player, if you're scoring a point every second game in college hockey, for him to become a real NHL prospect, he's going to have to get that up to about a point a game. And in coming years, if next year or certainly the year after that, I think Chris Vandevelde was also a fairly mediocre. I'll just look it up. Mm-hmm. Bruce, Chris Vandevelde was also a fairly mediocre scorer, at least initially in junior, but he's carved out a career as a fourth line NHL center. Yeah. Beyond me why Anton Lander isn't a fourth line NHL center. I think
he's a first-line KHL center and a KHL champion. So he just a matter of finding the right league. He was good in the AHL. He was a team captain, scoring leader, just for the NHL. Other than that brief spell under Todd Nelson, it never really came together for him.
Well, he was a great penalty killer, and the owners could have used him on the penalty kill last year. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, so, that's right. I mean, they got rid of all their penalty killers last year at their peril.
Chris Vandevelde, in his first year of college hockey at the University of North Dakota, had 9 points in 38 games. Okay,
so there's a .5 points per game as a freshman in NC2A. That's not nothing. Like a lot of these guys, as you say, he was given a pretty important role right off the top, but that also is not nothing. Oftentimes, the thing is, the freshmen are really very much bit players, and they don't really get to a bigger opportunity till their sophomore season. So he's a bit ahead of the curve.
So that was Vandevelde, and fair enough. He did make the team. And then in his second year, Vandevelde got 32 points in 43 games. So my point is, Rassinen, you're right. Like, it was great that he made the team and got regular playing time. So that's an up arrow. Definitely last year wasn't a down arrow for that player at all. It was an up arrow. But to see the progress you need to see in terms of him being an NHL player, which is a very, very difficult, steep pyramid to climb, we're going to have to see closer to like 2 points every three games or 3 points every four games this coming year. Vandevelde played all 4 years at North Dakota. Then he played he played like 5 years in the AHL. And finally, he broke in for 3 years as an NHLer before going over to SM Liga last year. So he didn't stick. He played three NHL seasons though. With Philly, that's right. So maybe Rassinen can carve out that kind of a pro career. It's going to be a long, but there's going to be like lots of opportunity in Edmonton.
That's bang on the player type that Rassinen projects as, in my eyes, Vandevelde. And, of course, we saw him a little bit here in Edmonton. He got three cups of coffee in three different years, and then he moved on to Philly and actually made the team full-time. But you're not looking at a potential top six forward, I don't think, down the line. And anyway, you're looking at hopefully one or two of these guys works out as a depth player. And I like his chances to, you know, to at least get a shot.
He's going to get a contract. I'd be surprised if he doesn't. Based on where he's headed now. Okay, number 17th on our list was Cameron Hebig, who's a very interesting prospect. And that he missed an entire season of hockey the year before this one. And he falls into that. He and Cooper Marody are almost the exact same age as Connor McDavid. And again, like they're the only two prospects in that age group and born in 1996, 1995. The Oilers are really low on forward prospects from that age group. So they have Hebig and Cooper Marody, and that's pretty much it for prospects with a hope. Forward prospects with a hope in that age group.
Right.
So Hebig, Bruce, tell me, you wrote the post on him. What did you find out about him?
Well, I found out that he's a guy, first of all, who missed an entire season as a 19-20, what should have been his last year of junior. And he was an undrafted player all along, so a bit of a long shot, but he's one of these guys that just went up, 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 across the board in every category, from 13 goals his first year in Saskatoon, to 18, to 26, and then after missing that year, which, I mean, just wipe that off the books altogether, he jumped to 41 this year. He went from 26 points to 40 to 69 to 90. So, I mean, just his ramping up in his offensive output. And he's very much an offensive player. His plus minus went from minus 35, if you can imagine, to minus 28 on a terrible Saskatoon team, to minus 12, and this year plus 13. So again, ramping way up the but of course, all this time he was 17, 18, 19, 21 years old as he went. So you expect improvement in junior. He's a right shooting center, got a good release. We saw some of that. He went to the Memorial Cup, eventually got traded to the host Regina Pats. And he had a good showing in the playoffs and a good showing in the Memorial Cup. Showed a good release, and he was able to beat goalies from the slot.
I liked his skating, Bruce. I saw him. Goalies. Yeah, junior goalies. I saw him in the Memorial Cup, and I really liked his skating. He's fast. Mm-hmm. He's got some speed. And he's got a good shot, like you say. So he's got some offensive skills. And maybe if he moved to the wing. You know, he's the kind of player, though. He seemed to show a little bit of grit as well, who could maybe be a third or fourth liner. So, he's not the kind of player, like I would say, like Ostap Safin, for instance, or Kirill Maximov. I don't think those players translate very well as bottom-line players. But Hebig possibly could. And he'll be in Bakersfield this coming year, and he's going to be vying for time on a Bakersfield power play that could be pretty stacked. I mean, you're going to have Ethan Bear, I think, on that team, and he should be putting up 2 points every three games, I think, at the AHL level this year, Ethan Bear. And you're going to have Yamamoto probably. You'll have Cooper Marody. And Hebig will be there. Tyler Benson's going to be there. So there's lots of young players. So the first time in years, a chance that the Oilers are going to have some young players putting up big scoring numbers. And I know in your post, you looked at how Tampa Bay did, and that they had, you know, out of their top five scorers, I think three guys are 20-year-old at the AHL level. Yeah. And the Oilers didn't have any young players who were putting up points at the AHL level. So for the first time in forever, the Oilers are going to have a chance, and hopefully Woodcroft will play these guys, give them the playing time they deserve. Going to have players down there, young players who should be leading their team in scoring, and that's a good sign for the Oilers organization.
Well, he's an example of, I think, a clear effort by Peter Chiarelli to address the lack of minor pro-ready talent. And by talent, I mean actual talent. Like, they got lots of bodies down there, but how many guys that are creative offensive players did they have last year? Like, any? Josh Curry, and I guess Ty Ratty for most of the year. But by signing Hebig as a turning 21 overage junior, that's like a draft choice where you don't have to wait the 3 years for the guy to be ready to turn pro. He's already at that point. And you don't have to invest the draft choice. I mean, the only expense was a spot on the 50-man list. I mean, you can't sign 30 guys to do that, but if you pick the right one or two guys, that's a quick way to speed up the process. And the other obvious example was the trade of a 2019 draft choice to get Cooper Marody, who we're going to talk about in a second, who's also, same age and ready to step into the AHL as an actual skill forward, and in fact, skill center. And so they're really going to upgrade, I think, the talent level, especially up front in Bakersfield this year.
Looks like in the Oilers, after they took Jordan Eberle, they just seemed to bat like with lower picks. I mean, Eberle, of course, was a first pick, but a lower first round pick. They just seemed to back away from taking super skilled players, or they didn't do a very good job. I mean, they did take Marco Roy the 1 year, but there was a lot of taking of players for grit, like Mitch Moraz, Travis Iwanek, rather than going with the top scoring player at that same level. And it just has really left them bereft of skilled players between the ages of about 20, 25 at the AHL level. So Cooper Marody, though, was he picked up with the pick they got from Patrick Maroon, the third round pick?
Yeah, they traded Maroon and they got JD Dudek. And they also got a third round pick in 2019. And right at the time, Chiarelli said, I really wanted to get a player with this. And don't be surprised if this draft pick never gets used by us as a pick, but gets moved for a player. And he didn't waste any time. In fact, the Marody pick was made after the trade deadline in the NHL, one of those rare post deadline trades, which simply means that you can't use the guy in the playoffs. But he was dealing with Philadelphia, another non-playoff team, and they were also dealing with, a future, obviously a guy in college. So they made that move in just in the NC2A playoffs. I got a chance to watch Marody play two games in the regionals, both of which were won by Michigan. So then that kept him there for another 2 weeks so that he could play in the Frozen Four at the end of the year. And it cut down his end-of-season trial with Bakersfield to just three games. But in the two games I watched with Michigan, I was very impressed. He's got real skill, this guy. He's got a real I don't know that he's got great wheels or great first step, but he's very good with the puck on his stick. Good at finding the open ice, just making the move into the right place to open the passing lane and then zinging the pass through. He was dangerous both as a shooter and a playmaker. And that was my takeaway from those two games. And then, of course, you got to see him play then.
Yeah, I saw him play his three AHL games over the internet, of course. And he was the best player on the ice for Bakersfield in those three games. He has a real ability, great hands, just can really pass the puck, stick handle the puck, move the puck. He's not a super fast skater, but he's very agile on his skates and can make moves on his skates. He is a really, really strong offensive hockey player. And I think he may not be a center in the NHL. He might, though, slip in on the wing on one of those top two lines. Mm-hmm. And again, I don't see Marody as someone who's going to play on the third or fourth lines, unless you go with a third line that's an attacking line. He's a very offensive-minded hockey player. I mean, when we saw him in the prospect camp in July, there was a little bit of a skating gap, I would say, an agility gap that was noticeable between him and a player like Yamamoto, certainly a speed gap between him and a player like Ryan McLeod. And that's why they're higher on the list than Cooper Marody. But this is a extremely strong. I mean, if he was in the if there was a WHA, Bruce, Cooper Marody would be killing it in the WHA real soon. So I think he's going to do that at the AHL level this year. I think he's going to have a really strong year because he does have dynamic offensive skill. Whether the skating is there, we'll see. You know, that's going to be, and whether the defensive intensity and puck sense, whether he really dedicates himself towards that, it's going to make the difference between him being an NHLer or not, because I think the offensive talent's there.
Yeah, he's got an interesting backstory. He was drafted in the sixth round by Philly, 2015. He's one of Peter Chiarelli's extensive collection of six-round draft picks. Many of them from other teams, all of whom seem to have taken the NC2A route. He got in his freshman year, he got mono. And that just took the wind out of his sails, as mono does. I can attest to that personally, having had it as a youngster. And as such, not only did his hockey suffer, but his grades suffered. So his second year, he was ineligible to play in the first half of the season. Only in the second semester did they let him into the lineup. So he had just an 18-game season in year two with 15 points. Then as a junior team season, he exploded 40 games, 51 points to lead the conference in scoring. And this is as a junior. Usually, you know, that's the territory for the seniors to do the damage. So for a junior to lead the conference in scoring, that's, you know, that's quite a feat. And that's when Chiarelli pulled the trigger on this third-round pick for him. You might say, well, he was a sixth-round pick. Why did we have to give up third for him? Well, because his development over the subsequent 3 years, even with the huge double hiccup caused by that mono, is he blossomed. And I like the trade. I think they got a very decent prospect. And rather, I mean, a 2019 third-round pick. Today, that kid is either 16 or 17 years old, and he's years away from possibly being able to contribute at the NHL level. Whereas Cooper Marody, we might see him in an Oilers sweater this year.
It was a very good trade. And so he projects to be in Bakersfield. I could see him playing a few games, but he could be the center on a top line with Kyler Yamamoto on his right wing and Tyler Benson on his left wing. Mm-hmm. Big. I have slotted in. Hebig's going to be competing at center with Marody, Josh Curry, who's a really strong AHL center.
Proven AHL center.
Brad Malone, who is a fourth line NHL tweener. And then there's Hebig. So there's quite a bit of competition at center right now. Tyler Vessel played center in college, I guess. There's Joe Gambardella, who played some center, has played center. So there's lots of competition there at center. And the top two lines, I mean, Hebig's going to have a tough time making one of the top two lines, but I see Marody slotting in there quite easily and leading the way on that team. So the last player on our list today, Bruce, is Ryan McLeod, who was drafted, who was consensus, absolutely consensus, to be drafted between about 20th and 30th in the NHL draft. You just go down the list of people who rate prospects, and they all had him there. And the Oilers, he fell to the Oilers at 40th. Mm-hmm. And before you get into the reason why that is, because you did an extensive look at the scouting reports and you kind of found a common denominator of criticism, I should say I've only seen him play the one game at the and it was partly a 4-on-4 game at the Oilers prospect camp. But, man, did that guy stand out. He was just flying up and down the ice. He was big, fast, and could handle the puck. He reminded me a lot of Tyler Pitlick in terms of his skill set. You know, maybe not the most talented offensive hockey player, but someone who can really, really skate and has some puck skills and has got some good size. Took Pitlick a long time to establish himself as an NHL, but mainly for two reasons. I think he was under a system where he should have got more ice time in Bakersfield and have to put that on Todd Nelson as a rookie first couple of years. He also got hurt a lot, constantly was getting hurt. It was mainly getting hurt with Tyler Pitlick. If McLeod can stay healthy, Bruce, this is a player we could see in the NHL, not this year, probably not the year after, but the year after that, in a third or fourth line role after a year in the AHL. If he can come in there because this guy is, he's got incredible tools, and I can see why people rated him so highly. But how, why did he drop to 40th?
Yeah, well, that's a good question, especially in a year where there wasn't that many centers in the draft. And the ones that were there, there was this huge premium on them that they got picked way ahead of where they were ranked. Like Kotkaniemi in Montreal went third overall after not even being in a conversation for top 10 until very, very late. And was it Howden that went around?
Hayden, Barrett Hayden went fifth.
Barrett Hayden, yeah.
I think it was fifth or sixth. Was
but
it?
They were, yeah, they were, both of them were like picked way early because the center crop was so thin. Yet somehow on the other end of that, Ryan McLeod, who's a center first and a winger second, and he does have the versatility to play wing and did so in Mississauga, but his primary position is center. And he's got a lot going on, not the least of which is he's not injury prone. He's played two complete game seasons of 68 games in the OHL and one of 62 preceding it, where he took six games out to play for at the World Hockey under 17 tournament that year. He's big, he's fast. He's seemed to me, I was watching him play two games one was the top prospects game and one was in that summer showcase. So in each case, not playing with the usual teammates, playing with dudes he didn't really know. And yet he looked very much like a team player, you know, like he moved the puck, he found the open guy, and he got his feet moving. Man, can he fly? So lots of positives. I did, because I've never really seen him play in sort of proper games that weren't showcases. I did delve into the scouting reports in some depth on McLeod, and several of them had a similar knock that he doesn't do enough to get inside. They don't know how well he's going to do in the physical battles against the men of the NHL and so on. And I don't know how much of that is echo chamber and how much of that is, you know, legitimate independent observations of the player. I do know that in the highlight package that that our friend Matt Mozewicz provided that I put in the post, he sure didn't seem to be having trouble getting inside on those plays, but of course they were all goals and assists that was in the highlight package. So it's very much a corrupted sample, if you will. So whether those plays were the exceptions and there was too many times where he just sort of pulled up and didn't do much in the O zone, I will say in the D zone and the neutral zone and in going in both directions, which is this the key point for me, he hustled just as hard on the back check as he did going in the other direction, at least in those plays where he was in frame and had a chance to contribute defensively. He was doing so, and he showed a lot of game. And you know what? The guy is listed as 6'2", 207. And he's 18 years old. He turns 19 in September, right at the beginning of training camp.
There wasn't a faster player with the puck at the Oilers prospect camp, I don't believe. Yamamoto, including Yamamoto, who's pretty fast with the puck. Mm-hmm. So it looks like in the draft, I'm just looking at the draft, two centers look like they dropped. Joe Valino dropped to 30th. And he's not quite he's a really, really super skilled player. I don't think he's quite the skater. And McLeod dropped in, but three guys were taken higher, as we've mentioned, Kotkaniemi and Barrett and Hayton. But Ty Dellandrea, who's listed as a center, right. Mm-hmm. Also went 13th overall at Dallas after not nearly being rated that high. So it's interesting what happened with the centers, that some stretched higher, but Valino and McLeod definitely dropped. So who knows what was going on. Yeah, so Bruce, I'm really bullish on that player based on the one viewing I have, which is exactly the wrong way,
of course,
to rate a player and to be bullish on a player. But he sure did show off a dramatic and exciting skill set in that game. And anytime you see a player who can skate like that, you just think he's got and with size like that, he's definitely got a shot. So hopefully he'll be making what would you say a reasonable expectation is for him?
Well, he's gone from 20 to 42 to 70 points over his 3 years in the OHL. And of course, with that late birthday, he's a year ahead of a lot of the draft players, many of whom have played 2 years a junior. It depends a little bit. Like they've had some serious graduation there, which means more ice time for our man Ryan McLeod, but maybe less skill to play with. His brother, Mike McLeod, first-round pick of New Jersey Devils in 2016, they played quite a bit together last year. Mike is going to turn pro this year for sure. Their top scorer, a defenseman, Nicholas Hague, who scored 35 goals and 78 points in 67 games. He's graduated. Owen Tippett is the other main guy there, and he was a first-round pick of the Panthers, I believe, and he almost made the NHL last year, so we'll see what happens with if Owen Tippett comes back, he'll probably be Brian McLeod's line mate, and that could affect McLeod's totals by 20 or 25 points, you know. We have a real elite line mate. So, but I would certainly expect him to improve on that 70 and get somewhere in the 80 to maybe even 100 range, depending on what happens with Tippett.
And make Team Canada.
Well, yeah, there's that. And then, yeah, which would, of course, subtract points from the total. But I'm just projecting over the full season.
It's interesting. His brother, Bruce, was drafted 12th overall by New Jersey in 2016. Mm-hmm. In the year he was drafted, he had 61 points in 57 games. Mm-hmm. So very similar statistics point-wise in their draft years, if I'm not mistaken.
Right, the brother being much younger relative to his draft class.
Like, no, he's a February born.
So he was sort of in the top
five months.
29th percentile of age for the draft class. Yeah, and Michael would be more in like the 60th with a February birthday. I mean, yeah. Ryan barely missed being eligible for the 2017 draft by under a week. So that'll knock him down some spots. At the same time, when you draft these late birthdays, you know the player is that much closer. He's got 1 year left of junior, and then he'll be turning pro a year from now. And by then, he'll have had 4 years of junior, so there's no reason to hold him back anymore. You want him moving on and up. So, again, maybe whether that's part of Shirelli's strategy to get older juniors that are a little bit closer because he wants to fill that gap quicker, I can't say, but what I can say is that their top two picks this year were late birthdays in Evan Bouchard and Ryan McLeod.
And I think Michael McLeod is also viewed as a more physical player compared to his
faster, brother. Even yeah. faster.
Yeah.
He's okay. Apparently a super burner, Mike McLeod.
Okay. Alrighty, so they've got some guys at center. I think we'll probably see in Edmonton, we'll probably see Marody first for a few games, maybe this year, and then McLeod after that. But there are some players there. So it'll be interesting to see. So next, Bruce, we're going to talk. We haven't decided which position we'll talk about next, but we'll just keep plugging away at this. And
what are the goalies, eh? Because we're all done ranking the goalies, and we still got wingers and D-men that we've got to write up. So anyway, we've got lots of prospects in every category. So
we'll go through them all. Thanks, Bruce. Yeah. Thanks for talking today.
Yeah. Thanks for watching and listening, everyone.
And in the meantime, and in between times, this has been another edition of the Cult of Hockey podcast.